Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deducci. And this time round, we're doing Fallout, the TV series and the video games, which means we'll be talking a lot about the Cold War. And mad, mutually assured destruction. I hope you're having a good day. So, let's go into the background of the video games, because there is a new TV series out from Amazon, which this is going to lead into. Seems to be doing very well. It's already been renewed for season two. So what we've got is Black Isle Studios in 1997 produce the very first Fallout game. It's a role-play game. So you play a survivor of a nuclear war, and you have been living in a vault. This is a secure nuclear bunker, a fallout shelter, if you will, and society's been going on completely isolated from the greater outer world for centuries, and now you come out of the vault and you go on an adventure. Now, what's interesting in the original Fallout is, and indeed this is true for later Fallouts as well, but specifically with the first one, is you could give yourself various stats. So you had a limited amount of stat points, so you could make yourself incredibly strong, but then you'd have to lower your intelligence or charisma or stamina. You get the idea. And people worked out pretty quickly that if your intelligence was too low, you in essence couldn't communicate with anybody. But if you stacked it all into strength, you could go around and just beat your way through the game. Clever. And what made the initial Fallout game so interesting is there were different groups above ground. It wasn't that any group was specifically good or bad, although some were clearly more evil than others. They just had different ways to survive, and you could play one group off another. For example, if you became particularly friendly with one group, that would shut you off from missions from another group because you're seen as an ally of our enemies. And also, there were ways that you could just, if you had a high enough intelligence or charm, you could talk your way out of a situation. Really flexible game, very well regarded when it came out in 1997, but didn't really set the world on fire. A few years later, we get Fallout 2 coming out, again, very similar game. It's an isometric game. So what does that mean? It's almost like a game of chess. You've got these little figures moving around a screen, and you're in control of them, almost like a god moving them around. Then this particular IP gets bought by Bethesda Studios, and Bethesda had really made their name with the Elder Scrolls games, such as Morrowind, which is the third one, Oblivion, which is the fourth one, and Skyrim, which is the fifth one. These are hugely influential 3D RPG games set in a fantastical world. Think dragons, wizards, dwarves, elves, you get the idea. And then what happened was, they, after the success of one of their later games, graphics engine, and some of the same kind of mechanics they've been using with the Elder Scrolls games, transporting it into the Fallout series. And I remember going over to a friend's house, and he showed his little journey around this derelict area, and I fell in love with the aesthetics, and in particular, the VATS system. Now, whereas with the Elder Scrolls, if you're going to fight, you fight in real time. But the clever thing about the VAT system is time pauses, and you can zoom in to various different body parts, and it gives you a percentage likelihood of you hitting them. Now, obviously, if you're fighting somebody and they're wearing, I'm going to just make this up, let's imagine they're wearing a steel helmet and a steel breastplate, your chances of damaging them is pretty low in those two particular areas because they're armored. However, their right arm, which is holding a gun, isn't armored, so you could actually focus in on that, and if things go your way, there's the RNG, the random number generator, going on in the background, so if you hit that arm, you're actually likely to disable them. It could literally tear their arm off. And now, they're just an armor-plated person with one less arm, and now you've got a much better chance with them in terms of fighting with them. And I love this. It's called the VAT system. It stands for something off the top of my head. I can't remember what it was.
Hello, Jim. This is Greg, the producer, calling in from behind the scenes. I think you'll find that the VAT system is the Vault-Tec assisted targeting system, my dear chap.
So I bought the game, and I really enjoyed it, but I did notice one of the joys of the fantasy versions of these games was opening up a treasure chest, and then you'd find gold in it, and maybe you'd find a plus one sword, and it kind of shimmered in the sky. It was made with gold and jewels. Whereas because this is post-apocalyptic, it means everything's run down and grubby, and the actual currency is bottle caps. It's like, this costs 5 caps and things like that. The palette was just greys and browns and tans, and it's just not as pleasing visually. And that's the bit that sort of I was a little bit let down. After a while, it's like, I'm just never going to find anything that's particularly cool. Understandable in a post-apocalyptic world. And I absolutely love some of the moral dilemmas. There were many, like the earlier games, and like some of their fantasy games, sometimes there were multiple different ways that you could fix a problem. So that came out in 2008, 16 years ago. Then we had to wait a whole 7 years before Fallout 4 came out. And that came out the same year as The Witcher 3. And The Witcher 3 pretty much blew everybody away in terms of its moral flexibility, your different groups that you could work with. It was doing the kind of stuff that Bethesda had been doing with their games, only better. And the graphics were amazing. And the same year, Bethesda brings out Fallout 4, and they're using the same games engine that they've been using for at least 10 years. And it just didn't look as good, and it was different to Fallout 3, but not that much different to it, and the graphics weren't that much better, and now you had a chance to build stuff, but because this was single player, you're the only person doing the building, nobody else can see your little work of art of your settlement, and there were these endless missions where you had to sort of protect people. It just became hard work. Suddenly it felt like a job rather than an adventure, a journey, and all that kind of stuff. And I, like a lot of people, kind of got a bit turned off by Fallout 4. It got gushing reviews when it first came out, but what was interesting is a lot of those places that did buy the hype initially did start saying, this isn't as good as we thought it was initially. And whereas it did get some spin-offs and it did do well financially, the other problem with Bethesda games, these big open worlds, is everybody realized there's going to be glitches, there's going to be bugs when it's this big and this ornate and this much stuff going on in it. Errors will be made. But it was the same kind of errors that we've been experiencing for 10 years for their games. Like, can you really not do some game testing just to sort of get some basic quality control? Thank you very much. And I just remember that the Skyrim, which came out in between the two Fallouts, that was the absolute peak of what made Bethesda fabulous. And Fallout 4, just the more you played it, the more it felt a bit disappointing. Like I say, it could literally be compared with another role-play, open game, flexible adult game earlier that year with Witcher 3, and it just felt wanting.
Toss a coin to your Witcher, oh Valley of Plenty, oh Valley of Plenty.
However, one thing that absolutely separates the Fallout games from the other fantasy ones, which makes Fallout better in this area, is the design around the vaults and the very dark sense of humor that is linked with the Fallout games. Just so you know, the Fallout games each appear in a different city. In between Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, there was a spin-off game using, in essence, the details from Fallout 3, which is, again, shows you how the limitations of Fallout 4, that there was Fallout New Vegas. So you're now in Las Vegas, as opposed to Fallout 3, which was based around Washington, D.C. It's just a different environment. And what's lovely about it is, and of course, I can't, this is a podcast, so I can't show you things, but the tech, although this is obviously set in the future, somebody came up with a genius idea of, look, rather than having it like a crumbled version of Star Wars, instead they went, well, look, when was everybody really worried about the potential nuclear war? And the answer is 1950s and early 60s. That's when it really got to a key. Think of the Cuban Missile Crisis. More on the history stuff later on. So what they decided to do is have this aesthetic where, yes, there were robots and laser guns and this vault technology, which is clearly beyond our technology today, but the fashion, the music, the commentaries, the adverts, and some of the technology like cathode ray TVs was all very 1950s. In the fourth game, this is quite clever. In the fourth game, you start off just before the nuclear bombs drop, and you are living in a white picket house. It could be suburban Pittsburgh, let's say in 1955, and yet you also have a house robot that's floating around and talking to you, and you're going talking to Vault Tech, and you can kind of walk around the house, and it has this very 1950s aesthetic, and yet there's also tech there that doesn't even exist today in the 2020s. So it's a beautifully lovely idea, and the music are classic hits, you know, things like Pat Boone, things like that, rather than the Rolling Stones, Beatles, or some kind of Kraftwerk electronica or anything like that. And it therefore creates a real unique flavor to the Fallout series of games and TV series that just isn't there in any other kind of sci-fi. Now, just so you know, I've mentioned this in the past, there is this idea of steampunk that most people are at least familiar with. What is the definition of steampunk? Well, the joke is if you get three people into steampunk and ask them what the definition is, you'll get four definitions. But broadly speaking, it's set in the Victorian era. It's set in the 19th century, and it's getting more technology than you possibly could out of a steam engine. So you would have a steam-powered computer, which is, in essence, impossible, but you could have that in steampunk. Everybody goes around in Zeppelins. That's, of course, what you've got to do. That's the lore of these things. And yes, there were hot air balloons that existed in the Victorian era, but even in World War One, you didn't quite have them running on steam power. They were diesel engines. But when you get this idea of, in particular, things like World War II, but with the fantasy or sci-fi elements to it, so a classic version of World War II would be with walkers. Think of mechs, but mechs in the style of Panzers or Shermans, but they got legs rather than tracks. There's a specific game from Warlord Games called Conflict 47, which is sort of World War II, but not, if you see what I mean. An alternate version. So that can't be steampunk because everybody's using petrol and diesel driven engines. So this isn't steampunk. This stuff that's set in the 40s and 50s, but with science fiction elements, is referred to as diesel punk. So there we go. Fallout is an example of diesel punk rather than steampunk. And this aesthetic, as I say, is prevalent everywhere. And what's also lovely is you get these educational videos and you get this imagery everywhere from Vault Boy. Vault Boy is a drawn cartoon. He is clearly the Scooby-Doo or Mickey Mouse of Vault Tech, who are the company that makes all the vaults to keep you safe. And Vault Boy is blonde and he's wearing a blue suit, jumpsuit, which is what everybody tends to wear in the vaults. But he's really fun and he's non-threatening, just like a Mickey Mouse type character, and he can educate you. He never says anything, but he's the animation while you get a nice 1950s crisp voice talking about things. I'm kind of hoping that Greg might throw in a little bit in here just to give you an idea.
In the wasteland, essential supplies will be scarce. When an item of value is found, keep it close and away from bullies. The stronger you are, the more you can carry.
It's got this wicked black sense of humour to it. It's kind of winkingly knowing, going back to the 1950s propaganda promotional videos, government videos in the 1950s, particularly from America. This is pure Americana, but with this very dark twist where obviously the bombs did drop. And then we come to the vaults themselves. Now, in the case of the TV show, it's clearly taken inspiration from Fallout 3. In Fallout 3, you start off in a vault. It's all very clean and crisp, but you've got like linoleum everywhere. It has this 50s feel, but you are living inside a vault. And you have a dad who is voiced by Liam Neeson. And what it does is you literally, the very first moments are your birth, and it's like click to move your arms. And you grow up in the vault, and so you learn the basic ways of how to walk around in the game, how to shoot in the game as you go to a firing range for firing practice. So in other words, it's a very clever tutorial level for you to learn, but also at the same time, it's drip-feeding some information about your dad and about the world and about how the vaults work, etc. And then your dad disappears, and you want to find your dad, so you now leave the vault. So you're the first time, you've been living in a vault your entire life, and there's been generations that have been living in the vault. These are called vault dwellers. You're now outside, and you got no idea what's out there, and there are lots of bad things out there. It's an irradiated wasteland, blasted scenery, so you can get things like rad roaches, which are giant cockroaches out to get you. There are mutant rats, there are bandits, there are ghouls, which are heavily irradiated humans that are, in essence, zombies, which also can move very quickly. There are rogue robots, and then there is the Death Claws, who are the scariest thing in the game. They're fast, they take a lot of damage, and they dish out a load of damage. They can sometimes be almost a one-hit kill situation if you're not properly set up for them. Plus, also, there are areas where you walk in and your radiation level shoots up and you start losing energy and health. It's a marvelous kind of survival, kind of funny, kind of shooting game, kind of role-play game as you go to different places, and your job in Fallout 3 is to find your dad. This is the basic plot of the TV series. However, to show you how different it can be and how different the vaults can be, in Fallout 4, as I said, you start off just before the bomb. Then you hear the air raid sirens going and you have to rush to the vault. And you can literally see the bombs dropping and the mushroom clouds rising, and you get into the vault. And in this occasion, you're put into suspended animation. So because the events of the games are happening several hundred years after the initial nuclear strike, in the case of Fallout 3, you're in a generation that was born and raised in the vaults. You don't know anything better. You don't know the world beforehand. In the case of Fallout 4, you're literally one of those beforehand people who's now stumbling out into the world 200 years later and now trying to find, in this case, your infant child that was also put in suspended animation with you. So there are different vaults and different things, and this is what makes Fallout so funny, because there are times when you will find different vaults and you realize that Vault Tech is using each vault as a social experiment or sometimes as a scientific experiment. There's one vault that you may stumble across in one of the games where the entire vault is populated by clones of the same man. And what's quite nice is they all get along quite well. They've created a very communable and communicable society, which is lovely. Others are outright creepy or death traps or all kinds of awful things. This is where the writers, and there are writers to video games, just clearly let their imaginations run riot. There is an unknown amount of vaults. There can be thousands in theory, and therefore they can have as many different vaults doing as many different wacky and crazy things as they want to. I think I've told you about the games. Clearly, I quite like them. I'm obviously a bit disappointed with Fallout 4. But let's move on to now the TV show. And video games, as I've said in the past, there's a kind of curse associated with video game movies because, particularly in the 1990s, there wasn't the budget, there wasn't really the understanding, and to be honest, the video games from the 1980s that they're turning into movies in the 1990s were pretty rudimentary games, and it's quite hard to turn them into a movie. Perhaps the most classic is the Super Mario Brothers movie,
from the early 1990s. Boy, was that both weird and wrong and a huge flop and a colossal critical and commercial failure. However, they do it right, though, in 2023 when you get a Super Mario Brothers movie and it's properly animated and it's got voice actors and it becomes an absolute monster smash hit of the year. It's the second largest grossing movie of 2023 after Barbie. So well done everybody involved with that. We've had other good ones as well, like Detective Pikachu. And then if we're looking at TV, back in 2023, there was The Last of Us TV show. Now, I did a whole episode on that, but as it sort of sunk in, I'm going to turn around and say, I actually think I was a little bit disappointed with it. And I think the people who made it became a little bit too pleased with themselves. Now, the whole point of The Last of Us, if you don't know either TV show or video games, the point of it is there's been an outbreak, not of zombies, but of infected. It's more fungal-based rather than being bitten by a zombie-based. But in essence, it's the same thing. You've got these monsters that could attack you, and they're very hard to kill, and society's completely broken down. The message, both in the movie and in the video game, is that no matter what monsters lurk out there, actually the most dangerous thing you can ever come across is another human being. Man's inhumanity to man knows no bounds. It's a very poignant and important point, powerful message to make, and it's absolutely in there in the video game. But also in the video game, you're being chased by infected, and you have to fight infected, and you have to...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
To stay hidden from really big infected. There's lots of game elements, and it reminds you that there's this constant threat everywhere. However, in the TV series, there are times when they are almost embarrassed about these video game elements, and while the story follows pretty closely the story of the characters, all the action beats are in essence missing. There are some episodes where you're lucky to find one infected. There's a little part of you thinking at times, it's like, what's the problem? There doesn't seem to be much in the way of threats to these people. Why don't they just set up society again? Because they didn't seem to want to have too much of that. They were leaning so hard into the acting, dear boy. Now, that's a choice, and it was very well regarded, and lots of people wanted to watch it. But it is noticeable that the creators did say, yeah, we need to put more infected in season two. And I would absolutely agree with that. However, with the Fallout TV series, they understand what Fallout is. And so, whereas these are all completely new characters in it, but the reality is they've absolutely got it down pat. We start off with Lucy, played by Ella Purnell, as this very chipper girl, and in essence, she's going through what you went in Fallout 3. All she's ever known is a vault. She is a vault dweller of Vault 33. She's a young woman, and she's basically saying, my sexual organs are all in place, so I would like to meet somebody from Vault 32 so we can have disparate children. You know, we've got to sort of spread the gene pool, if you like. Can't keep breeding in our own vault. I'd like to meet somebody from Vault 32 because this is an interesting experiment. Vault 31, 32, and 33 are all separate vaults with their own shut doors, but they are all interconnected so they can actually meet each other and therefore interbreed so as to stop any inbreeding going on. And so she says, it's time, I'd like to meet somebody from Vault 32. And there's big celebrations, they meet people from Vault 32. This all happens in the first episode, I'm not really spoiling anything, but it turns out people in Vault 32 aren't who they think they are, and they've actually been attacked by outsiders, and these outsiders are now pretending to be Vault 32 people, and so they attack everybody in Vault 33. This leads to the fact that her dad is whisked away, and who's played by Carl McLaughlin, and so Lucy decides to leave Vault 33 out into the big bad world to go and see what's happening next. Now, because obviously this is a character which you're seeing rather than it's a first-person view in 33, they decided to write Lucy as an incredibly capable woman, but totally naive. You know, she has got no idea what's going on out there, and, you know, if she gets hurt, she'll go, gosh darn it, rather than any kind of foul language, whereas the people living out there, boy, they are all kinds of awful. And again, to show you how flexible the video game is, an example is that you can pick up lots of skills. Now, it might be being able to regenerate health faster, or it might be able to survive radiation better, or be a better aim. All these kind of different skills, each one will help you in different ways. But there's one called cannibalism, where you're able to recoup health from eating the fallen that you've killed. But what's interesting about that one is if anybody sees you do that, you will instantly not be able to talk to people in other places because you're a person who wanders the wastelands murdering people and then eating them. You're not the good guy in that situation. It's a brilliant idea. And it's this sort of moral conundrum and Lucy having to sort of navigate her way through this stuff that it's just brilliant. I'm going to say Last of Us wins in terms of its dramatic chops, but in the case of Fallout, they're not embarrassed about the IP. They actively embrace the inherent dark humor, but also it's action-packed as well. And what happens is, both in the video games and in the series, and indeed, these are the poster boys of the series. This is one of the things that attracted me to Fallout 3, is this really cool-looking cyber helmet-type thing on the front cover. And that is a helmet from the Brotherhood of Steel. They wear these power armors. And it's interesting, and a number of people have commented on this, Amazon is going to be making a Warhammer 40,000 TV show or movie, and the poster boys of that are the Space Marines who wear power armor. And now that we've seen a whole bunch of Brotherhood of the Steel in their power armor sort of stomping around, it's like, okay, well, they clearly nailed that right, and they look just as cool in live action as they do in video games as they do on the front cover of video games. Well done that. And there is, I'll keep this vague so I don't give away any spoilers, but Maximus, played by Aaron Moten, he is a squire, which is somebody who goes out with those armor-plated Brotherhood of Steel type people. They're called the knights. The squires are the ones who maintain the knight, so they generally stay behind the knight, and the knight does all the killing, and they just clean up after them. And then, we need to talk about Walton Goggins, who is, in America, a bit of a national institution. He kind of looks like Jim Carrey when I first saw him in the amazing and highly underrated TV show The Shield. He's one of the crew in the main team in The Shield, this anti-gang unit. And he's a lot of fun in that. It's a very serious role, and The Shield is a very serious police drama. But he doesn't half look like Jim Carrey. And at the time, it's like, is he trying to look like Jim Carrey? And the answer is no, but Walton Goggins, he's been in Predators, which is an underrated one of the many Predator movies. It's one of the better ones. So he's managed to be killed by a Predator. He's also been in a Quentin Tarantino movie, The Hateful Eight. So every time you see him appear, you know he's going to put in a good performance. He's one of these incredibly reliable, one of those faces that you will recognize, but then may not necessarily know his name. And in this, he is having the time of his life. because you see him before the nuclear fallout, and he's a cowboy movie star, but he also gets paid by Vault Tech to promote the vaults, and so he's in all the promotional videos and things like that. And, you know, he's wearing the very dapper 50s suits, and he's always smoking, and he's just everything you'd expect from a 50s movie star. However, he gets irradiated badly, and he becomes a ghoul. Do you remember I said they're like zombies? And feral ghouls have no memory of their human life whatsoever. They're just out to get you. Whereas he has managed to keep his humanity, or at least his brain, going. It took, apparently, when he first started putting the makeup on, it took 5 hours to put the makeup on. And by the end of the series, they got down to an hour and 45 minutes. Still quite a long time to be sitting there. And so he, in essence, looks like Skeletor. He looks like a cadaver. He has tight skin over his skull, and he has no nose, which is removed digitally, for the record. And he is resurrected from a grave, and he's dressed like a cowboy still, only he's now like a bounty hunter. It's like in his pre-war life, he was like John Wayne, the White Knight type cowboy, whereas now he's far more like Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, a stone cold killer, a bounty hunter. And he's even got a cowboy hat, and he's got a really cool gun, and he's got this coat that's ragged, so it looks almost like a cape. And he is clearly having the time of his life just playing this character who's known as the Ghoul. And what's great is, in this particular series, is there is a thing, I won't bother going into it, but there's a thing that Lucy ends up trying to find, but also Maximus needs to find for a different reason, and the Ghoul also wants to find for a different reason. So you've got these three central characters all trying to get the same thing. Who's going to get there first? Who's going to get what they want? It's a brilliant conceit, and clearly, I think everybody's having a lot of fun in the series. As always with Amazon, money has been spent on this. The makeup alone for Walton Goggins is going to have cost a small fortune, but you actually see inside a vault, and there's a whole subplot about Vault 33, and at one point Lucy ends up in another vault completely, so they can reuse those sets, but those are clearly expensive sets. Plus there's the shooting out in the great outdoors. I suspect that there's quite a lot being shot in Namibia on the Skeleton Coast. This is an area where Germans used to have a colony pre-World War I, and in essence, the desert just came into their small towns. So you've got these little derelict towns that are now half full of sand. And the reason why it's called the Skeleton Coast, it's one of the few places on planet Earth where the desert goes straight into the sea. So if you were to ever get shipwrecked there, even if you go inland, there's no chance of any rescue. There's just more sand, and you will die of thirst. So it's a great place to portray a blasted post-nuclear apocalyptic place. So it's filmed in clearly multiple different locations. The budget's there. The special effects are there. It's rip-roaring fun. And as I've said, The Last of Us is just a straight drama. There's really nothing else there except dramatic stuff. Can you not hear the writing? Whereas Fallout, yeah, it's dramatic, but it has this dark sense of humor to it. It's very bloody as well. Quite sweary too. And with some genuinely great laugh out loud gags and lines. I thoroughly recommend it if you're an adult. If you are a young child, this is absolutely not PG rated, so please don't watch it. It's being kept away from you by your parents for a reason, okay? They're just trying to protect you. And look, I'm sorry, I'm just going to put it out here. I like Fallout better than The Last of Us. The Last of Us is just glum all the way through, and it seems to be slightly embarrassed that it's based on a video game. It's trying to be a proper drama. Whereas this is like, yeah, we're based on a slightly ridiculous conceit, but we're going to play it absolutely all the way through. And it works. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And what's interesting is the whole family is sitting down and watching it. And even my wife, who doesn't tend to like sci-fi, doesn't really like black humor, even she's enjoying it and likes the sort of central female role. It's one of these examples where we got Ella Purnell playing Lucy, and it almost doesn't matter that she's a girl or a boy. She's just a highly capable person, but not a ridiculously capable. You know, she gets into scrapes, she makes mistakes, she's a bit too naive in certain situations, but any vault dweller going out into the big bad world would make those same mistakes. But as I said earlier, the reason why they decided to pick the 50s, 60s vibe is because that was the height of the Cold War fear. This is where we get the Red Menace in America. And I am going to concentrate on America here. See, the thing is that once we get the Soviet Union in 1949 getting their own nuclear devices, we are now getting very dangerous. This isn't just a chance of sending thousands of troops against each other to finally find out who's best, but we are now have the capability of wiping out entire cities in the blink of an eye, where there's something that by the 1960s, when we go from dropping bombs, the B-52, which is ironically remembered, not ironically, but is incorrectly remembered as the plane that dropped all those bombs, particularly things like napalm and high explosive on Vietnam. They absolutely did do that, but that's not what they were designed for. They were strategic bombers. They were designed to fly high and for extremely long distances so they could drop nuclear bombs on the Soviet Union. In essence, when they were in Vietnam, they were being misused. That was never their design purpose. Turned out that they were very, very good at it. So when it comes to the 1950s, and you get this with things like Dr. Strangelove, which is an absolutely amazing movie. This is invariably also an inspiration for Fallout, where this Stanley Kubrick movie is absolutely genius. It's shot in black and white, even though they could have filmed it in color. And Stanley saw one shot of a cockpit of a B-52 and guessed the layout of a B-52. And actually, he had several people from the government very worried that he had somehow got access to then the secret plans of a B-52. It's like, no, he's just that good at technology that Kubrick could work it out. And we get a very young James Earl Jones, and you get Peter Sellers playing multiple different roles, hilariously, and Slim Pickens, and famously at the end, Slim Pickens is seen waving his cowboy hat, riding a nuclear bomb all the way down into the Soviet Union, starting a nuclear war, which doesn't get blacker humor than that. There is the great line between the Soviet consulate and the American general underneath the White House when you get Peter Sellers saying, "Gentlemen, you can't fight here. This is the war room." Good gag. Anyway, but the point is that this is the era where both sides knew that they would lose bombers, absolutely. Not all the bombs would get through, but we'll build so many bombs that some of them will get through. And then in the 1960s, part of the reason for the space race, part of the reason why so much money was invested in all those rockets that could get to the moon, is those rockets, which could go out of the atmosphere and then down, so would therefore supersede any kind of missile defense system against them. You change the people going to the moon and swap them instead for a nuclear bomb, and now you've got a nuclear missile. These are ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles, missiles that go from one continent to another, the ultimate ranged weapon that could destroy a city again in the blink of an eye. And this was the fear, an understandable, justifiable fear, which culminates in the Cuban Missile Crisis in JFK's presidency in the very early 1960s, where the Soviets move nuclear weapons to Cuba. And now, rather than having the length it takes for a Soviet weapon to go across the Pacific or across the Atlantic to continental America, now they're 70 miles away from Florida. There is no warning. If they launch, they've hit before you know that they've launched. And so this is why America freaks out. This was also what the Soviet Union didn't expect, because the thing is, if you live in Europe, you're always very close to your enemies. Germany and France do not get on and haven't done so for centuries, but they were next door to each other. Same with the Soviet Union or Russia and places like Sweden, which literally fought wars against Russia. So everybody was just used to being very close to their enemies. America had never had a serious enemy on their doorstep before, which is why the Soviet Union didn't expect that reaction from America. And fortunately, through the diplomacy between Khrushchev and JFK, they were able to defuse a potential nuclear war. But meanwhile, in America, there were all these things to try and calm people down. Well, first of all, the Soviet Union was seen as evil, better dead than red, red being the sign of the Soviet Union. And while that might sound awful, you do have to remember that when you've got nuclear weapons pointing at each other, probably bad things are going to happen both sides. Now, please, just because people talk about the corruption and bad things that the US did in the 50s and 60s, which are absolutely valid, that doesn't make the Soviet Union the good guys. Yeah, 1949 is when they get their first nuclear bomb successful test, that's under the reign of Joseph Stalin, who killed more people during his time as Soviet premier than Adolf Hitler did in the Holocaust. So, yay? Question mark? Anyway, my point here is this. To try and calm the American population, they had to come up with stuff. And there is the ridiculous things. And my mother, who's American, remembers hearing these things about duck and cover. Again, I'm hoping that Greg will dig some of this stuff out from somewhere. In case he doesn't.
In case he doesn't. Chem, ye of little faith.
Duck and cover. Paul and Patty know this. No matter where they go or what they do, they always try to remember what to do if the atom bomb explodes right then. It's a bomb. Duck and cover.
They even had a little animated mascot, like just like Vault Boy. In this case, it was a turtle who went into his shell.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover.
What can you do as a kid to survive a nuclear strike? You put your arms over your head and you crouch underneath your school desk, and that will protect you from a thermonuclear warhead. Yeah, right. There is literal footage of people duck and covering during a picnic where they protect themselves by throwing the picnic blanket over themselves. But of course, this is an example where it is better to lie to the people to stop them freaking out than telling the cold hard truth that when you hear that siren, you might as well kiss your family goodbye, you're dead. The lucky people in a nuclear holocaust will be the ones who die in the blast, because after that, you're going to get ash thrown up into the air, you're going to get global cooling, the crops will fail, and you are going to slowly starve to death. You might be drinking water, which turns out to be highly radioactive, and you will burn yourself from the insides out. Nobody wins. And this is what the idea of building up these massive amounts of missiles, nuclear missiles, both on the Soviet side and on the American side, was this concept of mutually assured destruction. You're not going to dare fire those missiles, because if you do, we will have time to launch ours, and we all die. Mutually assured destruction. It's definitely going to happen. And of course, the abbreviation for that is MAD. And that's what the world was like at that time. It's really quite chilling when you start thinking about it. When people talk about how awful and terrible the world is today, and there are many things to be worried about today, no doubt about it, people dismiss the Cold War by going, well, you know, it didn't happen. But of course, we didn't know it wasn't going to happen. It only stopped being an issue in 1989 when the Berlin Wall comes down. Really, it didn't stop until 1991 when the Soviet Union collapses. So it's one of these things where there's always been tensions, but nowadays, sadly, man's inhumanity to man could lead to the destruction of the entire human population, and those nuclear weapons are still out there. In fact, there are more countries than ever who've got them. So I'm not trying to depress you here, but this is an example where there is, you know, you talk about, hear about these survivalist people out there. They have a point. Things could go wrong at any point, so maybe you should have a little bunker to protect yourself. But at the same time, like I said, maybe you should just sort of wait and see how it's happened. Maybe we should make sure that we vote in the right people to make sensible choices rather than being overly aggressive or jingoistic or looking for a fight. Because in the nuclear age, that's something that nobody can win. I really hope you like this episode. Please click subscribe. Please give us a 5-star review where on whatever podcast you're listening to us on. And as always, another episode coming soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.